Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Orcs in the Basement, an RPG video game podcast. Coming at you pre-recorded from my underground cavern deep in the misty mountain ranges of Portland, I'm your host, Jay Ortega. In today's intro episode, we will be discussing the trials and tribulations of the infamous backlog, why RPGs, reasons why we just can't quit the genre, with some thoughts on my first playthrough ever of Final Fantasy IX, and lastly, some loot in the form of recommendations for your journey back to camp. I'm excited to do the podcast as a way to archive some of my journey with RPGs, both retro and more contemporary. I particularly admire the mod and emulation community for all the efforts they put into preserving games. I was recently listening to a podcast and learned that a great majority of games released prior to 2010 are largely unplayable because of hardware being outdated or lack of preservation and continuity. I'm certainly a noob to all this, but find it endlessly fascinating. This year, I'm going to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and I think it's September 27th through the 29th. To hopefully get a chance to meet some more of the community. This will be my first year attending, still deciding if I should volunteer to force myself to interact more than passively attending. We will see. If you plan on checking it out or have gone to past retro expos, let me know what your thoughts are. Also, if you're a fan of the show and would like to follow on social media, you can find me on Blue Sky at orcsinthebasement.bsky.social. So, everyone's backlog is as unique as their taste in games. Your backlog will often consist of games you've either acquired or wishlisted throughout the years, with the promise of one day finally having the time to play them all. So you can be part of that collective experience and finally say, why yes, Final Fantasy IX is the superior Final Fantasy game. I know I wish I had more time to play everything that's in my backlog, and I know it's impossible, but it does not stop me from trying. Whether it's a stack of video games on your nightstand or a fancy Excel spreadsheet with dates and time to beat logs, we all come to the realization sooner or later that we simply can't play every video game, although it won't stop us from trying. So why the backlog? Honestly, for me, it's a way to stay organized and prevent burnout. If you're like me and love your JRPGs, you come to learn that spending over 100 hours on a single game is just as typical as the three stages of defeating God in that final boss battle. So, I try to keep a rotation of games that will balance out the lengthy ones, even if it means trying out other shorter games. If anything, I find it a lot helpful. It makes me feel like I'm getting closer to my goal. And I also try to play a variety of other genres, with the mainline being RPGs, because that's what I'm here for. In short, it's been very helpful for me to keep a log of the games I'm playing, to also have a place where I can take notes with general and end-game reflections, keep track of time played and progress summary in case I end up taking that inevitable break after watching God knows how many episodes of Frieren or One Piece and want to jump back at a later time. With that criteria, this year I decided to take my backlog a little more seriously, so I created an Excel sheet for myself. So far this year, I've completed Final Fantasy IX, which we will be talking about later, Shin Megami Tensei V, Persona 5, A Place for the Unbound, Chain Echoes, and No Thank You, which, by the way, are not all RPGs. And I'm currently rotating through 8 other, well, maybe 9 or 10 other games that I hope to talk about in the show in future episodes. With that said, I'm always happy to read your questions and letters during the show. So if you're inclined, you can email me at oysterinthebasement@gmail.com for future mailbag episodes. Also, don't forget to subscribe and write a review so the good RPG word can reach more nerds across Hyrule and the depths. Okay. Also, I won't get into it today, but how I got back into gaming after a very long break is something I'll save for a future episode. But for now, let's get into some Final Fantasy IX. Final Fantasy IX was the first game that came out of my backlog in 2024. The game took me 45 hours to complete, which was relatively short compared to a JRPG like Persona 5. That took me 150 hours to finish the main quest. Not hating on that game at all, I think that every hour of those 150 plus hours was amazing. I completely love the game, but I'm gonna save that for a future episode. I'm just kind of putting in some context because I know JRPGs usually take you a lot longer than 40 hours, at least for me, since I'm pretty much a noob and struggle a bit, but I am here for the story and the experience, so I don't let that stop me. My history with the Final Fantasy VII series is a short one. I started with the OG Final Fantasy VII on Steam and followed it with Final Fantasy X on the Switch back in 2020. Played them back to back when we were staying home and hunkered down during COVID times. Not that COVID is over. I mean more so when I first started. I remember both games being exactly the right amount of escapism I needed during that time, and for that reason, I just fell in love. I wanted to, play and complete every game in the series, and the more games I play in the franchise, the more I realize how massive the series is. Recently, I listened to an episode of Retronauts that talked about all about the mods in the Final Fantasy community and the changes they've done to the first three games. And even that is something I wish to be part of my Final Fantasy run-through experience. So I know it's going to take me a long time, but I'm here for the journey, not necessarily to reach that finish line. Since then, I have completed four, and that's it. I'm currently playing the Pixel Remaster of 5, Final Fantasy 15, and Final Fantasy 6 for the Game Boy Advance. I've loved every entry in the franchise so far, although they are not that many, but I'm really, really excited about them. Even Final Fantasy 15, which I'm loving despite being dunked on by long-term fans of the series. I'm pretty far along with that one and hope to do an episode with what might be some hot takes, apparently, so look forward to that. Also, a reminder that for today's episode, I will mainly focus on my overall thoughts and experiences with the game, rather than a story retrospective. Picking up Final Fantasy IX in 2024 brought on some concerns regarding the game, especially if it would stand the test of time and be easy for a newcomer to jump into. I was wondering if the chibi art style would be a turnoff after having recently finished Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy X, both of which presented themselves largely as more serious in tone. These concerns quickly became irrelevant as the quirky art style made this game charming as it perfectly balanced whimsical humor and heartfelt serious story beats. Many herald Final Fantasy IX as one of the best in the franchise, and upon entering this world of high fantasy and adventure that alludes to the franchise's first games, it starts to feel like a love letter to its origins, as it leaves behind the futuristic sci-fi world that more recent games like Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VIII had managed to be massively successful with. Hironobu Sakaguchi was one of the creative geniuses behind the project. In an interview with IGN, when asked what his favorite Final Fantasy title was, he answered, "The upcoming Final Fantasy IX. This title is based on a reflection of all the previous works in the series. The coming installment is my favorite. It's closest to my ideal view of what Final Fantasy should be. But I've set my standards too high, so I think there's room for more Final Fantasy titles to come." It's important to note that this was one of Sakaguchi's last major projects with Square, as he stepped away from active involvement after the film Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. One of my favorite aspects of this game was the dynamic characters that form your party, starting with Vivi, a young black mage who is also one of the titular characters. Vivi has a childlike wonder to the world around him, as it becomes clear early on that his past is largely unknown to him. Because of this, Vivi is often questioning what his role in life is, eager to find clues of where he came from and determined to connect to any character that either resembles his race or holds any information on where he might find others like him. Because of this and some more deeply reflective scenes throughout the game, I feel that Vivi is one of those characters that carries this theme of existentialism throughout the story. And without getting too much into spoiler territory, I have to say that the Black Mages are one of the most compelling communities of characters I've gotten to learn about throughout this series so far. And I know it's not that many games I've played, but their presence was just so powerful, I felt. Later in the game, we find out that Black Mages exist purely as a means to an end, or tools at aiding the plot of the Evil Queen of Alexandria's master plan. So much so that they are programmed to just do her bidding, until for reasons later revealed in the game, some start to gain consciousness like Vivi. There are many scenes when you reach the Black Mage village where you see them trying to make sense out of life by mimicking traditions of other communities around them. One scene in particular really personifies their earnest natural wonder, and that is the one where there's two black mages both caring for a giant chocobo egg. Without having any reason or answer as to why, these mages continue to care and provide for the chocobo after it hatches. And that is just one example of like the many charming moments of just like seeing something so whimsical, but also carrying with it some more serious existential themes throughout the game. And that's why I love it. I feel like it balances both exceptionally well. Being that Vivi's impact as a character continues months after rolling credits on the game, I felt the need to go deeper into him as a character, but that is not to say that others aren't as instrumental parts of what makes this game so wonderful. In fact, it is the balance of each of them that allows for Vivi's narrative arc to reach the peaks and valleys that it did. They all complement each other so well. Even Quinna, the blue mage from Q's Marsh, who is often regarded as the comedic relief in the party, is so much more than that. They have a powerful role in battle and in one of my favorite scenes in the game throughout Quan's dwelling side quest. I cried during that scene and laughed, like, just both. I always found it to contribute to the story balance through some very heartfelt humor throughout the game. Another favorite moment was the dinner prepping scene when all the Moogles, along with Quinna and Naiko, work together to make the feast for your party members. I thought this to be the perfect blend of heart and humor. Quinna is also one of two characters that I perceive to be queer-coded in the game, as Quinna is often referred to by both he, her pronouns, by most characters in the story. As a side note, when looking at the Final Fantasy fandom wiki, they use non-binary pronouns, they, them, when referring to Quinna. which I thought was really, really cool. Also, shout out to the Final Fantasy fandom wiki. So helpful through my playthrough and just gathering notes for this episode. Just another community that is just like doing amazing work to preserve the legacy of these older games. Steiner is another incredible character that later joins your party. Known formally as Captain Adalbert Steiner, he has sworn allegiance to Queen Bran and Princess Garnet as he leads the Knights of Pluto. Like several characters in your party, he goes through transformational changes as his worldview shifts with the help of Garnet, Zidane, and the rest of your party. It's so hard to say what character had the most impact on my playthrough, as even when reflecting on Steiner's journey, several scenes come to mind that would have me place him high on the list. He's certainly the most animated out of the characters, meant for comedic relief, but once again is so much more than that. There's one scene in particular, though, that I just think encapsulates a lot of like the slapstick and kind of hokey humor of this animation style, and that is the iconic scene where he's kind of swinging from one tower to the next in a critical moment in the story. His face just goes through like every emotion, and it is just so goofy and charming, and I just wonder how this will be reflected in a future remake. So yeah, Steiner's facial animations, along with the chibi, quirky art style of this version of Final Fantasy IX, make me wonder if some of this magic might be lost if they decide to make a more realistic version of the game a la Final Fantasy VII Remake. Although I don't think they'll do that. I've seen now plenty to kind of gather that fans would be incredibly upset if that happens. Plenty of discourse. There's also like Unreal Engine fan-made remake of the beginning of Final Fantasy IX, which I think does a wonderful job of having that balance of that old school charm with modern improvements, and it just looks beautiful. I also really love a lot of the pixel remasters Square Enix has made, kind of maintaining some of the old things we love about the game but modernizing so they are more accessible, which I know I trust these people will do the same with Final Fantasy IX. But part of what makes Final Fantasy IX so wonderful, it's this charm of the late 90s and early 2000s, particularly with the pre-rendered backdrops, which are stunning, the PlayStation 1 graphics, and of course the cartoonishly medieval world conceived in part as a tribute to the history of the series. Early on, when I was introduced to Vivi and Navigator Alexandria for the first time, I kept thinking about how this world looked more like a stage Shakespearean play with a vibrant and ornate backdrops. The fact that this game is 23 plus years old only adds to the charm, in my opinion. So regardless of what comes next, I think it's important to preserve the old game. And I know there's, at this point, this is an example of a game that has several ways of becoming accessible to new players. So for me, I played it on the Nintendo Switch, and it was largely the old game with some added bonuses like fast forward and some of the power-ups. So a lot of that made my playthrough a lot shorter, I imagine, and less tedious. I didn't have to grind a lot, so I really appreciated that and thought that that was the sweet spot. So yeah, the version of the game I played, like I said, is on the Switch, and for me this was the optimal way to play it. That is perhaps why the game only took me about 45 hours to complete, like I mentioned, but I found the quality of life improvements added by the Switch port to be very helpful at several instances throughout the game, all while still maintaining the charm and aesthetic of the original. At one point, I attempted to play the game docked and hooked up to an older CRT monitor. It was novel for the first few hours. It looked beautiful. But then I got sick of the screen being cut off awkwardly because of the widescreen bars added to the port. That plus playing it in bed was ultimately the top way for me to play this game late into the night. Thank you. Now for the soundtrack. Continuing in the legacy of the epic soundtrack masterpieces in the series, Final Fantasy IX carries a mantle. According to the Final Fantasy fandom wiki, the series composer Nobuo Uematsu finished composing the music for Final Fantasy IX in a period of less than a year, a rather long development time compared to the time he used with previous Final Fantasy soundtracks. Despite working over 12-hour days, he initially composed around 160 tracks, but it would have required 6 CDs to release and was deemed too large. And around 20 of the tracks he composed ended up not being used. Oof. I think the OST goes exceptionally well with the cartoony, chibi style of the game, as it has the same tone reflected in each track. Another instance where you can tell that the series is going back to its roots, something that I am still holding out hope for in the future installments of the game. As much as I love Remake, Rebirth, and even Final Fantasy XV, you know, I am a firm Final Fantasy XV defender like I mentioned before. I do, however, hope to see some balance every once in a while and see the franchise go beyond just nods to its roots, but instead have it be a significant callback like we see in games like Dragon Quest XI. But those are just my thoughts. The fair city of Alexandria is where we firstly are seen. Alexandria is a prominent medieval fantasy kingdom on planet Gaia. The story follows a thief named Zidane Tribal. Also, check me on the pronunciation for any of the names. I tend to Americanize names. Zidane. I don't know why that feels like he's a surfer from SoCal, so I'm probably saying it wrong. Anyway. Zidane, or Zidane, is a member of a collective of thieves known as a Tantalus Leader Group, who at the beginning of your journey are tasked by Regent Cid of Lindblom to kidnap Princess Alexandria, also known as Garnet. Arriving in Alexandria, we note that the capital is in the middle of a very lively ceremony honoring the princess' 16th birthday. It is not until much later that the meeting turns into the seeds that will motivate Garnet along with newfound team of allies as they seek to stop Queen Bran and her ally Kuja from bringing calamity to the planet of Gaia. Kuja being revealed much later in the story, he has quite the entrance and is the second queer-coded character I can think of in the game. From his style to the way he presents himself, it is all very queer-coded, and I was absolutely here for it. Garnet and Zidane as characters remind me so much of two star-crossed lovers as you would see at the center of a Baz Luhrmann movie, especially for that time. I'm particularly thinking about the 1996 film Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes. From the moment they met at the party, I started to wonder if, like in Ocarina of Time, Zidane was inspired by a 90s era heartthrob like Leo DiCaprio. Not just as a superficial connection, but the story and vibe of the game as a whole reminded me of the same balance of bombastic fight scenes, humor, and romance that is found in Luhrmann's work. While doing research for this episode, I came across games writer Nadia Oxford's article, Romeo and Juliet is the floppy-haired father of modern Final Fantasy. I don't want to read anyone's work without permission, so I will add the link to the show notes. But I highly recommend listeners read it, especially if you've been listening to the show this far. I was delighted to see some of those thoughts validated when I read this, as a Final Fantasy IX in particular did seem to draw on the very least from, of course, similar source materials as Luhrmann, a lot of Shakespearean vibes throughout the whole aesthetic and story. And because of that, you become so immersed in the story that you forget that there are so many theater motifs. Also, might have been a few nods to that Final Fantasy VI timeless opera house scene that just, like, I was reminded of while playing this game. I know I said I wouldn't get too much into story lore, but here we are. That was mainly so I could get away with just focusing in on some of my favorite highlights, while maintaining that it's impossible for me to just cover everything with this episode being as short as it is. I was so happy I got to experience this game. I ended up playing the disc, or the last disc, however you want to categorize it. I know I was playing it on the Switch, but what you would consider to be the last disc, until 5 in the morning, in bed, when I completed it. I was ugly crying by the end of the scene, quietly as I possibly could, not to wake anyone up. I would highly recommend this game to everyone, especially if you're looking for an entry point in the series. Like I said before, I hear rumors of a remake in the horizon, and I just hope and pray that the art direction stays true to what made this cartoonish medieval installment so great. I feel that it has to be over the top and camp. That is the only way, in my humble opinion, as a new Final Fantasy IX stan. And we are back for some final thoughts. If you have listened to this pod so far, thank you so much for your support. Sincerely, if you're interested in writing in, I'm always happy to read your questions and letters during the show. So if you're inclined, you can email me at, once again, orcsinthebasement@gmail.com for future mailbag episodes. Also, don't forget to subscribe and write a review so the good RPG word can reach more nerds across fair Alexandria and the far reaches of the world of Gaia. Finally, for some loot to ease your way back to camp, I, of course, number one, recommend you play Final Fantasy IX. There are, I think, a few versions out there. The way I played it was on the Switch for the third time. And it was great because of the quality of life features, like I mentioned before. I could not recommend that version more. Number two is to watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. It's so delightfully camp, and the acting is superb. I miss those movies that had that popular theme of reimagining the world of Shakespeare in different historical settings. So because of that, I just really love this movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes, and John Leguizamo, who's also superb in this movie. So highly recommend it. Has all those like 90s like aesthetic, visually pleasing like moments that I also really enjoyed and were present in Final Fantasy IX, I think. Anyway, for my last recommendation, I just finished watching Delicious in Dungeon. Talk about this merriment of humor and just serious tones, good relationships. I really love this anime. Over-the-top bombastic battles, perfectly balanced with humor and strong characters that are as complex as they are funny. Delicious in Dungeon is based off the manga with a similar name. And for a long time, it had been one of those graphic novels that would stand out to me at the library. So I'm happy that I finally am able to immerse myself in this world. Just finished the first season on Netflix, and through my public library, I am placing on hold the manga so I can see like the differences between both of them. And hopefully get a little bit further in the story, just because I'm now a stan of that series as well. And really, really enjoyed it. Really recommend it to all lovers of fantasy. If you haven't checked it out, please check it out. It's such a great story, and I feel like while every episode is so short, it's just packed with so much action, comedy, and every moment is just so engaging. Really, really loved it. So with that, we come to close. Make sure to listen in next week when I go over Dragon Quest 11. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Orcs in the Basement. Nos vemos.